Today is May 21st, 2023, and it's Sunday morning after a few days of big celebration of Yom Yerushalayim that went very nicely. And I had family and friends and Talmidim at the Kotel Friday night. They tell me it was as crowded as it is on Shavuot. So, Kanayin Hara, it was peaceful and spiritual and meaningful. Ani Modeh LaKadosh Baruch Hu. Today's shiur, first let me just deal with some past issues, and then we begin one of the more important topics I will ever touch upon. It's at the heart of our Torah civilization today. And it's fascinating to see that my classmate, Rabbi Dr. Professor Chaim Soloveitchik and Rav Menashe Klein, from two totally different worlds and probably not knowing each other, not knowing what each other wrote, but essentially are saying the same thing. But first, we spoke about the Cedarhurst rabbi and his twin in the Lower East Side, and it's evidently the rabbi in the Lower East Side, Rabbi Yaakov Yitzhak Spiegel, who was the mashgiach in Bernstein's. There was a volume, I read this volume, about the rabbi in the Lower East Side, and he comes across as a wonderful, caring individual, rabbi from the Lower East Side. Regarding Rabbi Riskin and the Bekesha, I mentioned it, you know, it's not Me Ikare HaTorah was Kaliach Yad, but I've gotten endless descriptions of the Bekesha and Rabbi Riskin. And according to my nephew, if I understand Dr. Zev correctly, he wore it not just in his home, but he wore it to and from the shul in Efrat. And the reason he wore it is when I stated in class, and he said this many times, I'm told, by Rabbi Grinstein, it's a fulfillment of the Gemara in Shabbos, the Psak of the Rambam, Hilchot Shabbos, that on Shabbos you have to wear different clothes, and the word they use is longer, longer. And the Rav, when he first came to Boston, wore a Prince Albert, I think it's called. Also, it's longer than a regular jacket. In Yiddish, they used to say about a regular jacket, a kutza jacket, that it's short. And this is, Bekesha is different, and it makes a beautiful sight. I can also tell you that there's another part to Rabbi Riskin's personality, and I watched him in action a number of times. He was a drop younger, but he was my classmate for a few years with the Rav, and I taught his daughter, and he was a showman. And I think this also goes into the Bekesha, that, believe me, it's fabulous when you think of it. He thinks this is the Rambam, this is the Kiyum, this is a Bekesha. It leaves people thinking. And I would say that's also part of the Rabbi Riskin persona. He should live and be well and be strong again. He's created tremendous institutions, and Rakefet said long ago, and it turns out I was correct. In America, I don't know how many of you were aware of all he was doing. He had YU shaking in fear. A high school is talking in terms of a Beit Medrash and a smicha program and a collegiate program, and there was money and he had backing. And ultimately, when Pinny Bach died, young Rabbi Bach, who was his right hand in administering and education, they couldn't find the proper replacement. And he went in Aliyah. Here he organized beginning Yesh Mayayin. And everything he organized lives on in dignity, because here you have people that can replace, that can take over, that can continue. And the Baruch Hashem, all that he's established, is alive and kicking today. Now, coming back to some of our shiurim, in relation to, we spoke about women in the army and weapons, and a few weeks ago. So I found the source, and this had nothing to do with the topic. I found the source dealing with the Gemara and Baba Batra. And when I found the source, I found, wow, this should be quoted. It's an absolute proof to the Rabbat's understanding and my analysis and hopes for the future here. Rambam Hilchot Shchiya Umatana, Perek Vav, Halacha Yud Dalet. Mi sheshalach kelim mibidina tayam, v'yamar yitnanenu eilu levanai. A man, then, this is the whole sigya in the Baba Batra, when a father sends something, gives something, who is it for? The sons, the daughters, a particular son, the children in general. And the Rambam here sends, if the father sends kelim, and he says a generic term, give it to my children. Hare eli yitntena levanim ulevanat. It's sent for both the sons and the daughters. Haroi labanim labanim. Something that sons will use, give to the sons. And then the Rambam gives an example. Kegon sfarim v'klei milchama. Elliot, you read that? Books and guns. Klei milchama. V'harui lebanot lebanot kagom kli meshri chatzfuim v'chali zahav yitlu b'hem abanot. Now if he sent silk clothes or silk that you can make clothes out of and golden rings that you can make jewelry out of it, that is for the children. Now you should know that this Rambam, imagine in the progressive society, for the daughters, that's for the daughters. Thank you. In a progressive society, they would go crazy with this Rambam. I don't know if you're aware, they want boys to play with dolls and girls to play with cars as little infants already. God have mercy. Then you have a 10-year-old girl says she's a boy, not a girl. A boy says he's a girl, not a boy. It's a rebellion against God, the world, creation, religion, and all that has sustained us and able to reach this day and age, despite all the foolishness that is possible for human beings. This is a beautiful Rambam. Boys are boys, girls are girls. But see, look what you see from here. That Sfarim are for men, not for women. Guns are for men, not for women. But let's just think a step further. Sfarim are for men, not for women. You see, we've come full cycle in civilization. We live longer, we marry later. The women don't get married at 13 or 14 anymore. And the women go to high school. Women go to college. Women go to graduate school. Women can be in every profession in the world. So, Svarim, now we come to Klei Neshek. Only for men, not for women. And you can make a case, just like Svarim could be for women today, Klei Neshek could be for women. But there is a big difference, and I've alluded to, women going into battle is infinitely more dangerous than men. And that's a simple reason, because women are women. Don't want to spell it out, you all understand what I'm saying. One of our greatest problems in Masechet Ketuvot is when a city is captured, are the women still permitted to their husbands? They're seduced or are they raped? How do we look at it halachically? And we all know that this is continuous until today. I don't have to go any further than what's going on in the Russian Ukraine war at this very moment. And I'm not happy with women going into battle and carrying guns. And this is why I think, according to the Rambam and according to the Radbaz, we would be a lot better if the women would have logistical positions in the army. And we have, right now, with computers and intelligence, their entire units, where I'm told, are all religious girls who are doing fabulous, fabulous, life-saving work in the army. So it makes sense. The Rambam, the Radbaz, and everything we said. On the other hand, Vic, I have to be realistic. When you live with danger lurking at your doorstep, then certainly women have to carry weapons as well as men. And we see this all over today in Yehuda v'Shomron, where women have to travel, women have to drive, and we know what our problems are, unfortunately. And there are many religious women who are training today and know how to handle weapons. In the United States, I showed you the Haredim they wrote about, Harediyot, but it's Chabadnikiyot. And with all due respect to Chabad, I would never label them Haredim. Their Chabad is Chabad unto itself. It's not YU, but it's not Lakewood as well. And these women are worried stiff on Shabbos. You're in shul, you're a sitting target, and these women are trained in weapons. Now, Mark raised the question, we were talking privately, maybe there's a difference between a pistol and a machine gun. Logically, there you can make a case that a machine gun more is lo yubash, the Targum, what I quoted a few weeks ago. You see it, it's big. A pistol, you can hide in your purse, basically, and it's only b'shat ha'dachak that you use it. But I'll tell you, when you see women, magavnikiyot, and in this army, and not the army, the police force, and the mishmar zrachi, a pistol is worthless there. You have to be prepared for any emergency with proper weapons. And today, lo aleinu, anything less than a machine gun is only a b'dievet neshek, na lachatchila. I can tell you, and lo aleinu, magavniyot have been killed already, and lo aleinu, these magavniyot, almost all of them, I can't say all, but time and again you read about those who were killed and injured. They're all from the Eidot HaMizrach, Shomrot Shabbat, and all that goes with it. And they have to be prepared, have to be armed. These are questions, how do we deal with it? On the other hand, do you want only men and you don't want women at all? Then you have a different problem. What do you do if you have to arrest Arab ladies? Arab ladies who have got bombs attached to their body. Do you want a man searching or do you want a woman searching? In other words, there are needs for women in these positions as well. I can tell you in the Israeli police force, there's now a whole division training Harediyot to become police officers. In what field? They need them for family incidents. When you have a family incident, and unfortunately in the Haredi world it's a miyat hanika, not a miyat she'ena nika, and there are reasons why. A guy named Rakefet has been yelling for years, when you don't publish pictures of women, you raise perverts and you have problems. How can you have a man interrogate women? And they have Haredi. I saw one article, an interview with a high-ranking policewoman from B'nai Brak, with a sheitel, the works. But she explained that she is needed and she needs more women under her because they can speak the language, the mentality, and they're women dealing with women. All right, I have to say, these are issues that are halachically sensitive, sociologically sensitive, and water will seek its own level. Over the years, I believe that these issues will be solved. but it doesn't happen overnight. Now, regarding the story of the kashrut issue, the restaurant, I received a very fascinating email from Elimelech myself, and he tells me that this shaila that Rav Klein was asked, it comes from Rabbi Shane from Lakewood. He knows who this Rabbi Shane is. First of all, he's a nephew of the famous Ruchama Shane. Do you recognize the name? All for the Boss. Ruchama Shane was the daughter of Rabbi Herman. I know members of that family. It's a unique, unique family of Yira Shemayim on the highest level. Actually, I'm related by marriage today, because my granddaughter-in-law is the great niece of the Elephant family, and she is from this family. She is a Rabbi Herman's daughter. And Ruchama Shane, I remember when Feldheim was getting ready to publish her book, he had me meet with her, because they had published the Souvenir, and I think if you check with the Feldheim has statistics, I think the two best books that they ever published outside of a Chumash and a Siddur are the Shane and the Souvenir, her book All for the Boss and the Souvenir, and a great, great elegant lady, and this is her nephew. And he is a famous kashrut expert here in Lakewood. About 18 years ago, he pulled the hashgacha from the Chinese store in Malapan. He has been railing against that establishment ever since. And it was he who obtained the photographs proving that the guy was selling dreyfus. And it shows you how here's a rabbi who sensed it, but you see, there's a sad side to this coin. Whenever a rabbi will sense something, there'll always be another rabbi who will jump in and think he can solve the problems and he knows it all. And I can tell you in New York, I don't want to mention a name, but it was my classmate, he's no longer alive. He got involved in kashrut. Whenever the OU or the Chafkei pulled the Heksha, his Heksha popped up afterwards. And see, the same thing with Malapan, with that story, it breaks the heart. Here's someone who so many years ago saw that this man could not be trusted. And nevertheless, he continued and had a Heksha, and Shalom al Yisrael, until it was discovered, Tafis Pshuto Kamashma'o. All right, Adkan past lectures, now let me move into the present. And as I said, I'm touching upon something very basic. And I come back to, you know, again, there's certain incidents I went through in life that left a very deep impression on me. One of them we spoke about last week. Jack, did you check it out? Did I make it up? Or does Rav Menashe Klein say, Eben kenem treuen mit a $500,000? Jack, is it there? You can't hear. Why, God, I don't know what's going on here. I can't, oh, you can't answer me. I just wanted you to shake your head. All right. Anyway, so that story left a deep impression on me and affected my life. It came out again in discussion with my daughter on Shabbos. We were talking about these problems of children and money and whatnot. Baruch Hashem. Another little incident happened, which I've written about and told you about. And I was and a kid learning in Lakewood. How old was I? 16. 17 years old, and Rabbi Aaron Cutler finishes, they say, Kedusha, and right after Kedusha, Rabbi Aaron Cutler turns around, and he's facing the Olam. And imagine a kid goes over to him, a Talmud and a Meridoni maledictum in Yiddish, but a Schnipp Yingle goes over and tells Rabbi Aaron off that you're not allowed to turn around until after Atakadosh, the Amen there, for the bracha after Kedusha. Wow. And Rav Aharon looked at him quizzically and, you know, didn't say a word, but continued his own practice. Now, Mark, what happened? I'm telling you a story that you don't need witnesses. These eyes saw it. These ears heard it. So what's happening here? So it's very simple. This kid is an American kid. Well, American kids wind up in Lakewood. Where are they coming from? What type of homes? What type of tradition? Hitler totally severed the living tradition. And what happens until Hitler? You watched your father, you watched your grandfather, you watched your uncle, the people on the street. There was a living tradition, pulsating Torah. You didn't have to ask anyone or look anywhere. You just opened your eyes and you saw, you lived, you breathed it, you felt it. And once there's no tradition, you open up a book. So this kid was raised on the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. And when you're raised on the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, it's a machlokes ha'paiskim, and he's machmir, you shouldn't turn around. Rav Aharon had a different viewpoint. And the kids of Shulchan Aruch, we're not dealing here, Kima Aleihem Kol Yisrael, all right, that's a fine textbook. Whether you should use it today is a different story. In Israel, we have different textbooks to use to teach Halacha Shulchan Aruch. But it's an Ungarish, I yet knew his great-great-great-great-grandson. I 7 generations removed, we used to daven together, he's no longer alive. He was a professor of English literature in the universities in New York City before he came in Aliyah. When he retired, he came in Aliyah. Wonderful Jew. His son is Rosh Yeshiva in Kerem Biavna. And all right, this is the tradition, but the halacha lemaisa, to rebuke Baron Cutler? Who are you? All right. My classmate, I had many brilliant classmates, as I've told you more than once. Barry Liebman, should only be well. My dear friend Barry used to see, was 2 years ahead of us, but he sat in on the Sanhedrin Shir, so we were classmates as well. And Barry would tell me years later, he says, you guys were afraid of the Rav, but you don't realize the Rav was afraid of you. It was the brightest class he ever taught. We had a collection of geniuses all in one class, myself excluded. But Abba Braunschweigel, Meshagid, Jerry Blau, one top Meisy Rifkin, you can go on and on. Saul Berman, Ray Weinberg, one brilliant guy after another. Naftali Friedman, go on and on. Mention names, and all right, this was the Rav. Joining our class when he graduated Harvard was Chaim Soloveitchik, the Rav's only son. No one realizes Chaim Soloveitchik may be the brightest, most learned Lamdan raised in the United States. I don't think anyone else, not Reb Barin and not Reb Yaakov and not Reb, no one raised the son. It's unbelievable. Chaim, Kudshim, Taretz, Zrayim, you mention it, Chaim is there. All right. He later goes on, he comes to Israel, and the professor Jacob Katz becomes his mentor, his lodestar, I'll use that word. You have to understand, Professor Jacob Katz, I had the schud of knowing him and davening with him and getting Birchat Hanukkah from a little guy, maybe 5'5", 5'6". I don't think he weighed more than 140 pounds. You felt the wind would push him over. This man knew everything. He was a Yekka Kol HaTorah Kula Shas Poskim Shelet Mishuvet, but he was academic. He brought and taught at Harvard. He would see things in historic sociological framework, and it had a big impact on Chaim. Chaim, his magnum opus is his work called Yenam. You have to go through Yainam to see what one mind is capable of, where it combines. How, if you want to know anything about Stam Yainam and the Halachat and the Rishonim and the Shitat, Chaim Soloveitchik. If you want to know anything about how to make wine in the Middle Ages and how they transported it, Chaim Soloveitchik. If you want to know anything about the interaction between the general culture and economic sociological situation and the halacha and the wine, Chaim Soloveitchik. Mark, do you know Professor Katz's main work? Goy Shel Shabbat, the whole question on Shabbat, what a goy can do for you, and heating and turning the fire and logs and turn and that affects air conditioning, Reb Moshe, and this was, so Chaim developed this technique. You, Vic, what's amazing is no one will remember Chaim, not for Yainim and not for his Gatlet and Torah, not for his Yirat Shemayim. They'll all remember an essay he wrote over 25 years ago, published in Tradition, Rupture and Reconstruction. And Rupture and Reconstruction says it all. You could never understand. They just had a whole issue of Tradition celebrating 25 years with endless comments on Chaim's work. And it is a pace-setting work where you see Chaim. A kid growing up in Boston, I mean, it's hard to believe. This is not Reb Chaim, that work is not, it's not Reb Chaim Brisker's great-grandson. It's a kid growing up in Boston who understands his family tradition, where he's coming from, understands Reb Chaim and Reb Moshe and his father and his uncle Reb Aaron, but he also understands what's happening in Boston, Brookline, Maimonides, who they are, the old timers, the new timers. It's a fabulous work, Rupture and Reconstruction. Is he totally right? He's 90% right. I told you, Professor Steiner, Mark Steiner wanted to say, Mark Steiner, I'm quoting giants, Elliot, you have to know who these people were. So Mark wanted me to respond to Chaim Arni. You got to respond. You know that there were Jews who remained firm in America. Yeah, they were 5% of the Jewish population. Maybe 10%, I'm overestimating. But Chaim's essentially correct. And there's always exceptions to prove the rule. You have to be aware of that. I've told you, it's what's going on now. The whole Polish controversy came up again because the singer, whatever her name is, Creel, who sang, again, it turns me off. She appears half naked. Why do you have to appear dressed near? Why? Israel, all right. I don't understand it. Why that has to be part of the performance? Sing, you know how to sing. You can tell me she's a beautiful voice, whatever. But all right, but she has Jewish feeling, this much I understand. Their papers now have turned it into a big item because she met the Rabbi Rimon on the plane. And Rabbi Rimon didn't know who she was, and she was overwhelmed to meet a famous rabbi, and he left her his phone number if she has any shyness to call him. Very nice. And tremendous controversy because she was interviewed, and she spoke about her family almost entirely wiped out in World War II. And she spoke about it. So in Poland, they're going crazy as if she accused the Polish people of killing Jews. Idiots! I've told you 1,000 times, there were Poles who gave their lives to save Jews. It's a fact. Chasidei Umat Olam gave their lives. Pshuto k'mashmo. And there were Poles who killed Jews. And what are you getting angry for? This is part of the reality of what happened with the Ukrainians. I told you 1,000 times, not for now. But when you talk about life and you talk about reality, you have to understand it. And we were wiped out. The whole tradition, the whole living tradition. Who would ever dream a time would come when they had a fundraiser in Echves in Chicago, and they sent around before Pesach measurements to put in your table to measure the matzah. You should eat a kazayit, and another measurement for the lettuce, that you'd have a kazayit and be yotze and be able to make a bracha lachatchila, l'shalit matzah, l'shalit mora. Who had ever dreamed that time would come? You want to know how much matzah to eat? Look at your father, look at your grandfather. You want to know how much lettuce to eat? Look what went on in all the generations before you. But this totally was wiped out. And that's where the book becomes so important. And that's Chaim's essay, Rupture and Reconstruction. And it's hits the nail on the head. And this is how a Shik Yingel can go over and rebuke Rabbaran Kata, Kletzka, Slitzka, Rosh Yeshiva, that he turns around after he finishes Kedusha and doesn't work for Hakel HaKadosh. All right. Now, and this story comes up, I'll tell you two stories in Israel that hit home. One story, it's maybe 40 years ago already. Rabbi Yashiv, Rabbi Shalom Yosef Al-Yashiv was becoming very well known. And American kids are coming to Israel. I don't have to tell you the Brisky Yeshiva and whatever. Echves 80-90% Anglos. And the kids come to Rav Yashiv's home, and the Rebbetzin serves strawberries. And an American kid, I mean, the chutzpah, he goes, takes the strawberries, a few of them, that he's going to, and he goes to the window, and he's holding them up in the sunlight. And Rav Yashiv asks, what's this kid doing? And they explain to him, he's checking for bugs. And Rav Yashiv was very upset. He said, we do like our parents did. Strawberries, you cut off the green leaf where underneath there may be something there, and you wash it off, and then you eat it. And he was very upset. But this is the conflict. Rupture and reconstruction. This came up again, and I still am not certain. I'll tell you what I understand the issue to be, because rumors have spread. I got a letter this morning on Rav Hesher Sechter. So, this is, goes back years ago. So Rav Hesher comes to Rav Yashiv, and he asks him, how do we drink milk? Cows can have tophus. Now, from what I remember, and this should, and I received a letter from, I spoke with Rabbi Shechter's son-in-law after Shul Friday night. He is a Rebbe in a high school in Atlanta. Rabbi Feldman is the ninth grade Rebbe, and he's evidently a son-in-law to Rav Heschel. Rav Shechter does not drink milk since they mix the milks together. It is Ruba the Isala command. There is a problem of Ein Mavatlin Isalat Chila. He said that one of his sisters-in-law arranged for him milk for his whole trip when he comes to Israel without this problem. Now, this doesn't make sense. What I think happened was that here in Israel, they inject the cows for some sort of injection, hormone, maybe it protects against disease, a vaccine, whatever it is. And he evidently felt that where the animal is being injected, it causes tophus. I understand when this issue was raised in Israel, they arranged, I don't know if in all the places, all the kibbutzim, all the farmers, all the cowboys who deal with milk, to inject in a place where it would not cause any halachic question. But he came to Rav Yashiv, and he asked this question, how do we drink milk? And Rav Yashiv was upset with the question. Like he didn't, from what I was told, he didn't even relate to it. He said, our fathers drank milk, our grandparents drank milk, suddenly we're not going to drink milk? and he didn't relate to the question. I'm not certain it's the same question I have before my eyes here. As I said, it might have to do with the injections, and then therefore it makes sense that his daughter-in-law got milk from places where the injection is done, where there's no shaylef tafis. But it would seem to me, if they inject animals in Israel or vaccinate them, whatever the proper term would be, they certainly do it in the United States. I don't want to believe that the United States milk production is any less sensible or any less hygienic than the Israeli system. So this would be a shaila in America as well. I don't know. Hasn't been raised. But I'm not certain it's the question we're going to deal with. Now, this question, here is the source. Mishnah Halachot, Chelek Tet Zayin, Simen Vav. And this is a medium-sized tshuva to someone named, he writes to him with many titles, Rav Hagon, Rav Gavriel Yehuda Elovich from Bnei Brak. Could be Rav Menashe Klein knew him, but I want to tell you, Rav Menashe Klein writes a tshuva, and he's very troubled by the question. And today we'll start this tshuva, but I want you to be aware we're going to come to a second tshuva to him, much longer and much more what he touches upon, basic understanding of what Torah is about. And you can see that Rav Menashe Klein is greatly troubled by this question. And you can feel in Rav Menashe Klein, though he doesn't articulate it like Chaim, it's exactly Chaim's thesis, rupture and reconstruction. Okay, and I'll cite to you from the tshuva. And he has great derech eretz for this person. He says, you write to me, a number of Talmidei Chachamim have asked you to write to me, bidvar kashrut hachalev bizmanenu. And you're asking, what do we do today with milk? And we're dealing with the new reality today that there is a large percentage of tafis in the animals. Now, what is he referring to? Okay. One time, the Rav got hysterical in class. Well, how did he get hysterical? We were learning Yeredeya. And I don't know, someone shot at the Rav, glat kosher. And the Rav said, glat kosher, glat treif. And I remember, like a bombshell, glat kosher, glat treif. And everyone's looking at the Rav. What are you, was commandavit, what are you getting hysterical about? And the Rav explained himself. And the Rav explained that in his shlachtos, he averages, I don't remember the exact statistics, but more or less I think I'm correct. I'm in the ballpark. In his shlachtos, tafis, 25% of the animals are found treif. In other words, after they do the shchita, when the shchita is fine, there's no problem with the shchita. They open up and they look at the lungs and they quickly look at the inner organs of the animal. 25% are pushed aside, push them to the treif market. You know, I told you, shlachtos are never, it's not such a thing as a kosher shlachtos. By definition, you can't have a kosher shlachtos because you can have an aveli, you can have tafis. So, but you have an arrangement. Anything that we can't use kosher, take it treif. And Elliot, I can tell you, let me put this into parentheses, what I have seen in my life, what I have experienced, people don't realize what you go through. I was in the rabbinate, 61 to 69. But the real rabbinate, I was in 62. I built Maplewood, South Orange, with these 10 fingers and my wife's 10 fingers. So I'm walking through South Orange, and there's a Treif butcher. And in his window, a big sign, kosher slaughtered livers. So I go in, what's this? I introduce myself. And he tells me, well, these were slaughtered kosher. I said, yeah, but they're not kosher. They found a problem with the animals. You can't say kosher slaughtered. It's misleading. This is treif. And I said, look, I want you to take down the sign, and I'm going to walk by here, and we'll send someone every day. And if this sign is up again, I'm calling the police. And I had contact through my congregation, Herb Donner. I actually should bring my, Mark, did you ever see my police badge? I was a lieutenant. Herb Donner did that. If you ever only get stopped for a ticket, you flash this. I have it until today. All right, you know, it's, I don't, again, I have all these things out of the past. My grandchildren won't understand what I'm taught. They can understand my war ribbon from the Lebanese War, 1982. That the grandchildren can appreciate. But a police badge from Newark Police Force, 1960s, they're not going to appreciate. But you see, it was frightening. He puts up a sign, kosher slaughtered livers. Elliot, is he telling the truth? To a certain degree, yes. But it doesn't make it kosher. And we have a lot of tafas. So the Rav got hysterical. He says, and in this glatt kosher slaughtering place that rivals my slaughtering house, they only have 22% treif. He says, impossible. Glatt kosher, glatt treif. All right, I don't know if the Rav was right or wrong, but you can understand why he got hysterical. And here the question is, you have so much tarfus. Not only that, how is milk produced? All right, it's one thing you go into your backyard. Mark is a shlua chabad. He goes to Tanzania. This is the way they begin. And they have to, right away, the shaluch has to buy a cow or get access to a cow so his wife can milk the cow. They learn how to milk. I'm telling you, I read the memoir literature. It's unbelievable who these chabadnikim are. They will not drink stam chalav. So they milk, all right, you're milking your cow, fine, a nice, healthy, good-looking cow, a friendly cow. Everything is good about the cow. Tell me, milk, it's hundreds, if not thousands of cows. The milk is mixed together. They collect the milk. You ever see milk, big milk trucks? And you're drinking milk. That glass of milk that you're holding represents 1,000 different cows. You mean to say there's no tafis among them? Of course there are. Okay. How can you drink milk? All right. Serious question. Okay. You see, what you're getting involved here is basic to almost many, many simanim at the start of your Yoredeya, where you deal with food. What are we speaking about? Beetle. We spoke about this rice. Remember I told you the rabbinate, everyone is called up. I spent many a week before Pesach checking rice. And I explained to you the white tablecloth, and you pass it on, and you're looking, and you see anything that's not white, you pull it out. Then the rice is cooked. Rice is cooked. Beetle b'shishim. It's not Pesach, it's not Mashechu. You're dealing with oil, vegetable oil. Okay? for the sake of argument, let's say canola oil, which Ashkenazim certainly can use. What happens if something where the canola, I don't know exactly if it's shayach, but where the canola is being harvested, he's made the whole reason for the legumes, some wheat fell in. All right, before Pesach, batel v'shishim. And you can go on and on with examples, a shayla with a pot, a pan, milchiks, fleishiks, chametz, pesachtik, parva, not parva. You go on and on with all types of shaylas. You just finished the fleishik a meal. Beautiful cake, prepared in milchik a kelev. And the shayla, ben yomo, eina ben yomo, batel b'shishim, a lefel, a spoon, milchik, fleishik soup. This is what your day is all about. Tell me, if someone comes along and says, I'm not going to eat anything that had a shayla. I don't want to eat anything. I don't want to get involved. Please, take it away. Is he a good Jew? Or is he an apikaris? And you see, you're dealing here with basic halacha. Beetle, Dioraita, one out of two out of, knocks out one. Can you eat all three chatichot? You know for sure one is treif. Laws of beetle. Do we accept it or don't we accept it? Don't accept it, you're an apikaris. This is tradition. Mark, what does it bring you back to? My lectures on Erev, the Rush, the Chatam Sofa. Come on, let's talk about it. Let's be honest. I just saw, I forget where I saw it already, written up the whole Machloiket, build an Erev, don't build an Erev. No, I just saw with Zilzel against Rav Menashe Klein and some of his Sfarad. Here, you come to Brooklyn. Can you carry? Can't you carry? Rishita Rabbim, not Rishita Rabbim. Tzurat HaPetach. What kind of legal fiction is this? Are there fences by the water surrounding Brooklyn? Is there the side of the ocean? Does it really go up high? Ten tfachim, etc. So many cars. Do you count the people in the cars or not? Or are they reshit unto themselves? They're not part of reshit harabim. Do you count the Gentiles? What do you mean? 600,000 people out reshit harabim. All these questions. So someone comes along and says, I will not carry. All right. Machmir, in Yiddish sagt man azay, machmir is famir alein. Machmir, lahachmir, in Yiddish means me. Machmir, famir alein, I have a right myself to be machmir. But what about if someone comes along and says, this is a legal fiction, I saw this person wrote about the cause, but that's quite right. He dismisses it, what kind of narrative? Hey, you're an apikaris. This is Torah Shabbat Peh. This is Halacha. This is Masechet Eruvin. This is the Rush who yelled at his Talmud. In modern times, the Chatam Sofer had the same incident like the Rush, and he told his Talmud, if you don't accept this Erev, you are an apikaris, plain and simple. You can't go and undo what the generations did before you. And this is the whole question. Yes, these are halachic concepts. And it's very frightening. Mark has a Hasidic soul, has a soul of a tzaddik in him, from Holyoke. And here, Rabbi Eskel Shechter is right. in the milk is tarfish from trefa animals. 1,000 different animals. You mean to say that there aren't tarfish among them? 22%, 25%. How can you drink milk? Wow. Now, this is a serious question, and this was the question that came to Rav Menashe Klein. With Rav Heschel Shechta, again, I'm not certain, is it simply the injections giving in Israel or the general concept that a certain percentage of the cows are trefa? Yomo, you can't shake your hand and say general, because that letter I quoted, how could someone arrange milk? They open the cow to check that it doesn't have a tarfus in it, that it's not treif?
Well, you know, he started doing this, he decided to Machner after he went to South Africa, and they told him that 88% of the cows, milking cows, when they're shafted, they're found to be treif.
Yomo says that he started this chumra when he went to South Africa, and they told him there that 88% of the milking cows, when they're nishchat, are found to be
trafe.
I understand, at the end of their life, they're found to be trafe. All right, then he's part of this question. He's part of the question. I'm melamed zchut that it was in Israel, as I recall, with the injections. But if not, enoch inami. It's a shayla. He wants to be machme. Can't be. Okay. Well, excuse me?
If you happen to own your own cow, and
No, according to Rav Heschel, the cow can be treif. You own the cow from today to tomorrow, but you don't know what's going on inside the cow. Exactly. But we'll see. I'm just scratching the surface, but I want you to feel the depth of the question. Now, Rav Menashe Klein here is like Rav Chaim Soloveitchik. All our forebears drank milk. Halacha l'maisa. If our forebears wouldn't drink milk, the whole concept of basa v'chalav wouldn't exist. All of your adeya, all that we study, that we get smicha on, the heart of it is basa v'chalav. I remember in my time they already abolished treifas, because unless you went into a shlachtos, you basically never got a shaila with treifas. But shailas with basa v'chalav abound, and they abound until today. You run a kitchen, kids make a mistake, you're not totally awake, you grab the wrong spoon, the wrong fork. I get shailas from grandchildren, all right. This is part of life. It's nothing to be ashamed of. It's part of life. But he says, what kind of question is this that from time immemorial our grandparents avoteinu me'olam achlu v'shatu chalav u'gvina u'bepashtes samchu al rov behemot k'sherot heim? And we know as a fact. Now, if you will say that there's more tarfus today than yesteryear, and therefore perhaps we should be more machmir today, but halacha lemaisa, we don't live like this. E.g., and he uses this as an example, and we'll come back to time and again, and I'll give you the sugyas later today and next week. Tarfus, Eilat Treifat, these are the Treifat. What do you mean Eilat Treifat? We have 18 different concepts of tarfus in the body of an animal, the body of a behemoth, the body of a cow. All we check for when we're shochet, when we slaughter, are the lungs. Why don't we check all 18? And you'll see tremendous literature. It's ticha meruba, and the tafras is only a miut. And therefore we always go with the principle acharei rabim lahatot. Majority rules. Majority creates the circumstances in which we, or to which we have to deal with. And there is no question that the majority of animals are not treif. And therefore, somchim al harov. And even though there's so many animals that go into the milking industry and the container of milk that we will get, and there's no question that some of these animals are treif, but nevertheless, it doesn't affect halacha l'maisa, the milk. And here you get involved with miyat hanikah v'miyat she'ena nikah, that sometimes statistically the number is so small it's a miyat she'ena nikah. Could very well be with general tafas we don't have to check because it's a miyat she'ena nikah. On the other hand, there's a miyat hanikah which is defined halachically up to 49%. A miyat hanikah is also mevutal, nullified by the majority, but there you have to check. And that could be why we check the lungs, because their tafet is much more happening, much more discernible, much more tangible, much more real. Call it what you wish. But nevertheless, we drink the milk, we use the eggs, we follow the rove. That is critical to halacha and critical to our psak halacha in Yoredeya. Now, here, Rabbi Nasha Klein, first of all, let me give you the Gemara that deals with drove. Gemara in Chulin, Daf Yud Aleph Amid Bet. It's actually a sugya that begins on Daf Yud Aleph Amid Aleph and continues Daf Yud Aleph Amid Bet, continues through Daf Yud Bet Amid Aleph. It's a very important sugya. And the Gemara says right away that we follow the rov. The rov is halachically acharei rabim lahatot bata ruba minalin. And the Gemara says, how do we know we follow the majority? This is the pasuk. And we follow the majority in all instances. Now, what does that mean, in all instances? The Gemara, the ruba, the ita kaman, ruba, the leita kaman. And let me explain it. Majority, the classic example, you're walking along the street and you find a beautiful piece of meat. Steak, sirloin, roast beef, whatever, ribs, what do you call it? Ribs, you taught me that word.
Spare ribs.
Find a beautiful piece of meat. Can you eat it or can't you eat it? There are 10 butcher shops on the street. 9 are kosher, 1 is not. You're allowed to eat it because we say, acharei rabim lachatot. And this is something we see in front of us. Ita kaman, it's tangible. The ten different butcher shops are tangible. Another row, tangible. The Sanhedrin. Question comes up in Sanhedrin, whether or not to be Makadosh HaChodesh, like the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah. Did we see the moon? Didn't we see the moon? Is there a new moon? Today is Rosh Chodesh. It fits in. and we say we follow the majority, they put it to a vote. That also is tangible. But what about a case which is not tangible? Milk, where do you see the cows? 1,000 different cows give me this container of milk that I'm holding in my hand. We don't see the cows. Ruba the lesser, come on. But there too we follow the rove. Perfect example. Gemara gives another example where there's much more at stake. I'll quote the Gemara. Ruba the leita kaman kegon katan v'katana minayin. A little boy and a little girl. What's that talking about? The whole machloikis in Yevamot. Yevam katan shabal Yevamot katana yigdalu ze'im ze'. And let me explain it. A man dies and he's childless. His wife is underage, and he leaves a brother underage. Does the brother perform yibum with the wife? And here it's a whole machloket. What are you worried about? So it's very simple. Who said, in order to do yibum, we have to know that the person is capable of reproduction. I need not tell you, not every woman is capable, she can be an islandit, and not every man is capable, he can be a soros. I don't have to tell you, in the state of Israel, one of our proudest achievements is PUA, the organization that works endlessly helping people who seemingly can't conceive. What a credit to Israel and our halachic technology. I'll use that word. I know some of the people who work in PUA. Tzadikim yesodei olam. So what if this underage boy and girl live together? Do we allow it? Do we allow them to continue? And that's exactly the opinion cited here. Yigdalu yachad. We depend upon the rove. The majority of men are not impotent, and the majority of women are not incapable of conceiving. And that's exactly the Gemara. And there, I'll quote to you from Schottenstein, for we know that most minors eventually become capable of reproducing. But we cannot point to a group of minors and say most of this group will eventually be able to have children. And here too, rove the letter kaman, and nevertheless we follow the majority. Now, Daf Yud Aleph, so we see Acharei Rabin Lachatot is a pasuk in the Torah. It applies to every type of majority, whether the majority is tangible or intangible. Then the Gemara continues on Yud Aleph Amud Bet. You're going to see I'm going to tie this Gemara in with today's social, economic, religious headlines in every newspaper published in Israel. Let me first do the Gemara. Wait a minute, the Gemara says. What do we need a pasuk for? Why do we need Acharei Rabim Lachatot? You can prove it. The Gemara, Shechita. The Torah requires Shechita. Vizavachta. An animal you cannot eat, Eva Minachai. Every animal is an Isha Dioraita of Eva Minachai, a limb of a living animal, one of the Sheva Mitzvot V'nei Noach even. So V'Zavachta, we have to do Shechita. Hey, wait a minute. How can you do Shechita? Maybe, I'm quoting the Gemara, where he shoves the knife into the animal, there was a hole, a nekev. Tarfus, treif, the animal will not survive too long. It has a hole in its shechita area. And where you put the knife in, that's exactly into the hole. It's Shema b'makom nekav kashachet. Ela lav mishum di amrinan zil bata ruba. That where do we apply? How can you say the shechita is good? Maybe you put the knife in exactly where the hole is, right, and you take away any evidence of the trefa. You cannot check it out anymore. So that's why we have shechita. Zil batar ruba. And Eliot, when you shecht an animal, the majority of animals don't have holes in their neck in the shechita area. So you follow? The Gemara says, what do you need a pasuk for? We can learn it out from shechita. And the Gemara says, again, I don't want to sound too confusing, but look at the Gemara, it's very simple. You don't need a pasuk achoy rabim lahatot. The very fact that God told us to do shechita shows that we don't worry about tafis. Maybe there's a hole there. No. Holchim acharei harabim. You don't need a pasuk. It's logical. You do shechita because most animals don't have holes in their neck. So then the Gemara asks, wait a minute. Maybe where you can't check, where it's impossible, so we accept the concept of majority. But where you can check, don't accept the concept of majority. Let the boy and girl grow up. Let's see, can they conceive? Can't they conceive? I don't know. Let's check every animal in the world and expose them to an x-ray. We'll get to that, but not today. Expose them to an x-ray. And if this is the case, it's only here that you're going to worry. And the Gemara says, no, even if you can't check, you are able to eat, you are able to slaughter. And even Rab Meir, who says, we're chayshish for a miyat, we always have to worry about the minority, worry here too. And the Gemara says, there's one problem. If you're going to asa shechita, pesach v'kodshim ma'ika l'meima. How can you not be permitted to shecht an animal if there's a chiyuv d'oraita to eat a korban pesach? And kodshim shlamim, that you have to bring, that there are all types of halachot, we see that you eat a korban pesach, you eat shlamim, you eat kodshim, and if that's the case, we see acharei rabim lahatot, you're somach on the majority. Vizavachta, the fact that you can shecht, heichi, whenever you could check, when you can't check, you can check. But in general, it's much more than vizavachta acharei rabim lahatot. From this Gemara, you see that all over, we have to follow the principle acharei rabim lahatot, whether it is tangible, intangible, whether it's a young boy and girl with jibum, whether it's an animal with shechita, with a hole in the shechita area, and that's where the knife landed. In all these instances, the Sanhedrin, acharei rabim lahatot. Mark, why did I say this is contemporary? Very simple. What do we have today? Very popular. Veganism. Everyone, it's healthy, not meat, etc. articles in the Jerusalem Post, articles in Yediot. What do you eat instead? How do you manage? Where do you get your protein from? How can you be cruel to animals? It is even attributed to Rav Avram Yitzchak HaKohen Cook that the ultimate life of a Torah Jew is not to eat animals. That Adam v'Chava were not permitted to eat animals. That was the higher level of the ultimate civilization and creation. 10 generations later, God is matir animals after the flood, after Noah saved the animals, but it's considered a compromise with the more evil, I would say, desires of man. It's not something lachatchila, it's something b'diavad. Yomo found out about Rav Kook's position, and he got all excited. It makes sense, it's wonderful, it's good, it's uplifting. Mark, there's only one tremendous problem. Korban Pesach, shlamim, other korbanot that one has to bring. What do you mean you can't eat meat? What will you do for Korban Pesach? So that's exactly what I'm alluding to, that this Gemara which says you have to be able to slaughter, you can't worry about a neck of a whole. Ah, it's right in the headlines today. Rav Kook, no one has been able to answer, what about a Korban Pesach? You're a vegetarian, you're a vegan, what are you going to do? The Beit HaMikdash will be rebuilt, or next year we don't need a Beit HaMikdash, the Tshuvot from Gedolei Achronim, Rav Kivegidus, Rav Yosh Trunk, we have the Har HaBayit, we'll have Ben Gvir will be Prime Minister, and they'll allow the Korban Pesach to be Nishchatot. You got to eat a kazayat. Vic, this is only the start of the problems. Vic, are you up to date? There's not enough meat to go around. That's one part of the problem. Another part, meat is not that healthy. The red blood in the meat, etc., etc. What do we have today? They're starting to sell artificial meat. Okay, beautiful. Solves the problem of veganism. Solves the problem of vegetarian. Tell me, what do you do for a Korban Pesach? What are you going to do? Is it and someone will say it's considered meat. Is it considered meat? Isn't it? Korban Pesach is insoluble. You must have a Korban Pesach. It's a sheep. But what about all this artificial meat? You're a daya. Throw it out. You'll never have to bother yourself with the first part of your daya. Who? It's parv. For Benishlan, you won't have to have two sets of dishes. Never had it so good. Friday night, Shabbos, people, basaviyayin, yantif.
What do you do?
It says sudat mitzvah. The Brit Mila we spoke about, remember that if it's not a fleshik of Brit Mila, it's not good. It's not, l'chol ha'deyot, the kid will turn out a sheik, it's the Chassidic Rebbeim. What did you serve at the Brit Mila? Remember the sources we spoke about. Wow, this is a real, real problem. Okay, 1 second, just let me keep my notes organized. Yeah, this is a real problem. But halacha lemaisa, the Gemara in Cholin, beginning on Daf Yud Aleph Amid Aleph, the Gemara in Cholin, 100%, acharei rabim lahatot, even if you know there's tafas here, even if you know for sure part of the milk has to statistically come from animals that are treif, nevertheless, We drink milk, we use the eggs, and no generation has ever stopped because of the problem of some tarfus. And this is the Gemara in Chulin, and then there's another important Gemara. Let me cite the Gemara to you. Here it is. Membet Amid Aleph. This is the start of Elul Trefa. And this is a very difficult perek because you need, I would imagine there may be visual aids that you can find already on the computer. But I remember when I prepared Chulin, so I remember Elul Trefat, I drew pictures on every page of the Gemara. Today, I would imagine Schattenstein, perhaps Steinsaltz, then there was a photograph book, Rabbi Levinger, Moshe Levinger's brother, was a rabbi in Switzerland, put out a book with pictures of tarfus. You need that. But here too, you see, there's a whole machloket. What do you mean a behemoth's treif? I'm paraphrasing the Gemara Daf Mem Bet Amid Aleph. A behemah is treif, it can't live. The very fact that the behemoth is alive is a sign it's not treif. Or no? Is it possible that you can have tarfus and the behemoth can live and can be treif? And it's not a contradiction. It's a whole shaila in the Gemara. If you say the fact that the behemoth is alive is a sign it's not treif, then you've solved all problems. But if you say a treif behemoth can live, then it opens up all these questions. Can you or can't you? What's the halacha? Can we use it? Can't we use it? What does tafras mean? Logically speaking, unfortunately, life has taught us that tarfus can live. And the example I give is hurtful because it's real, but it's real. It's a fact. Tell me, you have a relative, a friend, a bad diagnosis. The word that we don't like to use, cancer. So sometimes the doctor will say, you have 24 months to live at the most. You know, we consult the statistics in the medical research. And what happens? Sometimes you'll hear a person is diagnosed, and I've lived this more than once, people think they're cured for cancer, 5 years don't go by, 2-3 years, and it comes back and comes back with such force. Within a month of the diagnosis, they're no longer alive. But what do you see from all this? People can live. The fact that there's most people, they'll get a diagnosis, all right. Chemotherapy, radiation, operation, people can go on living 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. Stories are told about tzaddikim that in their youth, their parents were told they're not going to make it beyond 18 years of age. And they went on to live to the age of 88. So you see, it's a whole machloikis. Can a nechaya, a behema, do they live? Don't they live? And then they quote the pasuk, Zota chaya ashetoch lu. And as long as the animal is alive, you're allowed to eat it, you're allowed to shecht it. As long as the animal is alive and you don't have to worry about tafas. And this is the Gemara. So kachaya asher tochlu. And as long as it's alive, no problem. And you'll see, the Gemara goes on, quotes the Ve'rev Yishmael, and this is brought down in the Medrashim, and Moshe Rabbeinu, Zolta Chaya Shetoch Lu, he would hold up the animals. This one you can eat, this one you can't eat. Make distinctions between the different species of animals. But there never was a distinction that you have to be choishish. The animal is tafis, the animal is treif. Moshe Rabbeinu never held up the animals and said, look for this siman. If it, the animal has it, even though it's alive and walking, it's treif? No. You shecht it. And tafis only begins if the animal is found treif after it is slaughtered. And Rabbi Nasha Klein from this Gemara says more proof that when the animal is alive, you never have to worry about tafet. And that's the Gemara in Chulin, Daf Mem Bet, Amid Bet, Elu Trefot. And what an important basic Gemara. And so what Rabbi Nasha Klein is saying here, what he's quoting here, tafis exists. You can't say there isn't tafis in the world. Nevertheless, the majority of animals are not treif. It can be a ruba the later come on and ruba the later come on. It's not that you have to have the 1,000 animals who gave their milk standing in front of you. And even when you know for sure that there has to be statistically treif animals, acharei rabim lahatot. And acharei rabim lachatot, if we wouldn't follow that principle, how could we have shechita? Because the shechita could be, if you're worried for a miyut and you're worried for something that the eye can't see, maybe he put the knife into the hole in the animal. And if that's the case, shechita could never be matir the animal. But what do we say? No, acharei rabim lechatot, and if you can check that there's no hole, check. But if you can't check, we're somach on the road. And the greatest proof in the world is the fact that kodshim, Pesach, we have to eat meat, and we don't worry about tarfis and all these chshashat. Vizavachta, and this is the Gemara in Chulin, Daf Mem Bet, that we quoted a minute ago, that Moshe Rabbeinu holds up the animals and he says, this type of animal species kosher, this type is not. But he never says, look for tafis, look for symbols, look for simanim on the outside of the animal while it's alive. And the whole machloket in the Gemara, one opinion is, the very fact that the animal is walking and alive is a sign it's not treif. And the other opinion is, which I think is more logical, that yes, you can have a treif animal, but it can live a year, 2 years, 3 years, it doesn't mean it's going to die immediately. Nevertheless, acharei rabim lachatot. Now, so this tshuva should end here, and it's very powerful, and should declare 100% that you can drink milk, you can eat eggs. Rav Menashe Klein goes one step further and see what's bothering the questioner is frumkeit. This is part of our generation. It's part of the reconstruction. We want to be certain we're right. We want to be tzaddikim. Chumrah. It's part of people who write about the Balei Tshuva. They say that Balei Tshuva are more prone to being machmir. And now think a step further. Meidin d'oraita, if you have three pieces of meat in front of you, one for sure was treif, the other two were kosher. What do you do? Meidin d'oraita yavish b'yavish? Two against one, acharei rabim lahatot. You're allowed to eat them. You're allowed to eat them, but for sure you're eating something that's not kosher. See, psychologically it bothers you. Should it bother you? What's the halacha here? All right, I want to end off, you'll see. He could end the tshuva here, he doesn't. He writes another long tshuva, and he deals with the whole basic concept that we cannot be apikorsim. Our grandparents, this is Talacha, this is Tovah Shebaal Peh, this is what we have to follow. And even if we're reconstructing Yahadut after the Holocaust, it has to be within a halachic context. I just want to tell you one story setting the stage for next week. You'll see what I'm going to quote next week. Yes, Yomo, I haven't said a word yet. Yeah, go ahead.
One more issue that seems to be relevant. Whenever there's tarfas involved, there's also a concept of kingdom palev.
Hold off to next week. There's a word in Hebrew, the first word I learned when I came in Aliyah in 69, savlanut. Okay? Don't suffer from savlanitis. Came up with that word. Okay, I want to end off with one real story. When I was going through Reb Menashe Klein, it brought back unbelievable memory. Let's go back to the Bronx, 1950s. There was a big park in the Bronx called Mount Eden Park. It's a big shul right next to the park, Mount Eden Center. And there was a big rabbi who was rabbi of the shul for many decades, Rabbi David Hollander. Big physically, tall, like a linebacker, and a tremendous rav, Rav David Hollander. Talmidget of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, if I'm not mistaken. He's a brother-in-law to Rav Moshe Sherrett. They were married as sisters. Their father was a Litvish rav in Far Rockaway, Rabbi Feitman, if I recall correctly the name. Now, Mount Eden Center Park, where you can't walk today by day, let alone by night, on Shabbos was filled with Jews. That was, everyone came out. So, there were survivors who wound up in Mexico City, and they had a daughter, and they wanted a daughter to marry a frum boy. And they had relatives in the Bronx, evidently, and they sent her to the Bronx, be part of the Mount Eden Center crowd. And one of my classmates brings back so many memories. First name was Julie. He's in the park on Shabbos, and he sees this pretty girl, yo hablo español, Spanish-speaking, Mexico City. And before you know it, they're under the chuppah together. This couple gave the Rav one of the most difficult shilas he ever had. Generally, he answered on the spot, got a shila. This shila, he said, oh, ich darf durch gut durchtrachten. I got to think this out thoroughly. And what was the shila? They married. She certainly had basic English. But, you know, it was not her native language and not her native reading language. And it turned out that she was using a margarine that had milk in it. And she never realized the margarine was in parava. You have this, by the way, in Israel, almost all margarine that made by Telma is parava, but there is one margarine that's milchik, she got to be careful not to be confused, but it's marked quite clearly, chalavi, chalavi. And there's now, they make margarine with canola oil and butter, and it's chalavi, but it's marked clearly. Those days, people evidently took for granted the margarine has to be para. By the time she discovered she was making a mistake, she had used this milchika margarine Shabbos after Shabbos with expensive dishes, silverware you can kasha, but earthenware, beautiful dishes, how can you kasha? And poor Julie tells the Rav the Shaila, I remember like yesterday after class, and the Rav keeps on asking him questions, and did you use all the dishes together? Did you use, what went on? Finally, and remember, it's an Einu Ben Yom already, many days have gone by, and a whole Shaila, how hot was it when the margarine hit the plates? Was it Yad Soledet? Wasn't it Yad Soledet? And I remember the Rav finally paskened that whenever you use the fleishik dishes, don't use all. One dish shouldn't be used. In other words, let's say it's for 12, a set of 12 dishes, what they call it, a setting for 12, use 11, don't use 12. Imagine you invite 12 people, and you have 11 good dishes. In those days, there wasn't like the plastic we have today and the paper we have today. So the 12th dish winds up being a very simple dish. 11 beauties and one ugly dish. What was the Rav Paskin here? What are we talking about? Fascinating. Wait till next week. Be'ezrat Hashem, and I have to tell you, Yomo hit part of the nail on the head. Tafis is there, tray food. Ugh, how can you eat it? It's part of the majority, but it's still tafis. And Reb Menashe Klein hits very hard. This is halacha, this is Torah, this is the way we've lived throughout the generations, and you must continue. And frumkeit is one thing, but when you turn it into ideology, it's again Torah Hashem Tamimah. So my dear students, what have we accomplished today? What have we done today? We finished out. I'm very proud of that Rambam I found in Sriya and Matana, which I hid, nothing to do with Reb Menashe Klein. It had to do with my learning Baba Batra. And lo and behold, fascinating. And the Svarim, and how you compare it with Kli Neshek, and a pistol versus a automatic weapon, a machine gun. All right, we're living, these are, a rifle is somewhere in between. Right? Because a rifle is not automatic. Am I right or wrong? Maybe I don't know what a rifle is today.
Was it covered by the question between a handgun and a long gun.
No, I understand. So that's somewhere in between. But I'd rather use the machine gun because that's what the women in the Mishmarzrech in the Magavnikim. I know the you follow me. Magavnikim. Mishma Gvulot, I think it's what it stands for. It was, you know how the Magavnikim, how it came to be? It was a phony shtick that only a Torah mind could invent. When the peace was achieved and there was some sort of peace deal worked out in 1949 and the Mohammed HaShechur ended, you were only allowed to bring a certain number of policemen into Jerusalem. It was limited. You couldn't bring army in, only a certain number of policemen. So Israel came up with a police force that was more than a regular police force. Mishmah HaGvul, I think that's what it stands for. You can correct me if I'm wrong. And that was the Magavnikim. And they are really fully trained army who act as police within big cities, particularly Jerusalem. And they carry machine guns. They don't carry plain pistols. And that's what we have today. So, all right, that's an interesting question. Water has to seek its own level. And I can understand if you live in Hebron and you live in areas like that where women wish to carry pistols. Men, pistols, women under their skirts, and men generally attached to their stockings, under their pants, or here where they carry it in their belt. It's exposed, you see. The idea is to conceal it, that the terrorist shouldn't know that you have a gun. If you're carrying it in your belt, people can see it. But I notice people carry in their belt, and there's some on the fact they're not wearing a uniform. Okay, but that's those questions that are behind us. The question here, eruption, reconstruction, this is overwhelming because it's so basic. Frumkeit, imagine not to eat milk products, not to have cheese, milk, eggs. Where do we stand? Ribbono shel Olam, all of tradition, everyone until today. Shavuot. Yomo, how does Rav Shechter celebrate Shavuot? The whole Shaila is that you have to have meat on Shavuot. But everyone, I know, we already have a cheesecake waiting for Shavuot to be defrosted. And this is the Shaila that Rav Menashe Klein is dealing with. He's dealing with here on halachic basis. I showed you two gemaras in Chulin. And Ein Hachinami Bata Acharei Rabin Lahatot. And it's basic to all of Yiddishkeit Acharei Rabin Lahatot. Sanhedrin, Kashrut, you can go on and on with examples. The boy and the girl, Yibin, Yavim, and Yavama, and basic. And the Torah says you have to shecht kodshim, Pesach Sheni, Zot Achaya Shetochal. How do you eat it? Only through shechting. Okay, we'll pick up where we left off and the story with Mount Eaton Park. You'll see next week how it, and I'll explain it halachically. When I was a kid, I had trouble understanding it. Today, I can understand it. I can put it into context. Yomo, any question? Over here, open it to the world. Let's see what the erudite audience has to say. Okay, and gentlemen, tomorrow, I wouldn't miss tomorrow's share. We'll deal with Mori Tarigan's question. Students, Rebbe, gradations, you're going to see an amazing story. And it all shifts gears after Reb Meir Shapiro dies so young. Yomo, until we meet again in health and happiness to the fellas in front of me, Das Vidanya. All right, yeah.
Recording stopped.
Okay, is it? Okay, can't we can't...
I didn't catch the Sima.
Ah, you're talking last week.
From today.
Oh, today you couldn't find it. One second...
I couldn't hear it properly.
Ay, God, why do we have such enemies with the Zoom? Should be very good, very clear.
It'd be my fault.
Acharei Rabim Lahatok, has to be clear. Okay, Yoredeya, Mishnah Halachat, Chelik Tet Zion.
Tet Zion?
Tet Zion, 16. Siman Zion.
Got it, thank you.
And the Shiva we're going to pick up next week, where he continues, is the same Siman, but one second. Telek Shisha Asa Siman Kuf Lamed Zion. It's much later. Kuf Lamed Zion. You follow? This one we started today is Zion, and that's Kuf Lamed Zion because they bothered him and bothered him again. Okay, are there any other questions? Gentlemen? Yeah, anyone?
The injection of the cow, I assume when they inject the cows here, they don't do it in a way it's going to kill the cow in a few days. They want to kind of live, maybe
yeah, but right? The question is, let's say they inject them in an area that hole, right, it turns it into a trefa.
So there you have you have a stereo between biology and...
So I understand, again, I'm working, I remember when the Shaila happened with Rav Heschel and Rav Elyashiv. That's the way I understood it. And Yomo understands it differently. He understands it that it's Mamish the Shaila you're dealing with here. From what I understood, when the Shaila was raised here in Israel, the rabbinate immediately, you know, there are people who work with the rabbinate who are experts. In Israel, we have from Jews in every field you can imagine, including animal care. So they worked out something that you can inject where it doesn't make it a trefa. That's what I understand. I hope someone is listening who can give me the facts. But that's what I understand. Halacha lemaisa, everyone drinks milk in Israel.
The veterinarian doctor will say where they're injecting the cow. This cow is going to live.
No, not a question of living, not living. No. If you take the viewpoint, which is the way we paskin, that the fact that an animal has a tarfus in it doesn't mean it's going to die tomorrow. If a person has cancer, lo aleinu, or heart trouble, today heart trouble we've done miracles with. Halavai with cancer, we should make that type of progress.
This is similar to what you gave a talk many years ago, how the Rav explained that halacha and science are different.
That's true too, that the Rav said each one operates within its own principles. His proof was... His proof was chametz, that from the Gemara in Pesachim with rice, that fermentation is not chametz, even though scientists will look at it that way. But halachically, zelachud v'zelachud. But all right, I hope someone's listening can explain Rav Heschel's viewpoint. I'm very curious, because I recall it had to do with injections. I also recall that Rav Elyashiv was not happy with the question. He felt like the strawberries. What's going on here? We're going to be frumer than Rabbi Levine, that was Rav Elyashiv's father-in-law. We're going to be frumer than Rav Chaim Brisker. By the way, Rav Chaim Brisker was a big maker with treifas. He was not as machmir as the others. And I once I was talking with the Rav, when I knew a little bit already, this had to be maybe 78 when I spent Shabbos with him in Boston. So the Rav was telling me, I know we got involved with the Masham Shvadran, the Brezhina Rav. The Brezhina Rav was Mekil and Treifus, and people put him in Chayram. He didn't have an easy time in Galicia. And the Rav said, my Zayda Zeichet was also Mekil like that. So I said, so how come they didn't put your grandfather in Chayram and the Brezhina Rav they ran after? So the Rav said, because my grandfather was smart enough not to publish. Follow? So that takes us back already to the Brisker mentality. Not everything you think do you say, not everything you say do you write, not everything you write do you publish. And the truth with the Rav is that he never published anything halachically until he was well on in years. and he weakened. Pashut, they put pressure on him. He published in philosophy, Ish Halacha. There were other, the lonely man of faith, but you see, philosophy, you can never be right, you can never be wrong. There are many different viewpoints. That he published, he didn't take on the Briska Chumra. But the Sheyurim, the Yotzeit Sheyurim, finally in the 1980s, he let Reb Yitzchak Tversky put out Sheyurim L'Zeicha Abba Mori. And that was the first time the Rav allowed something. He didn't publish it himself. It was Reb Yitzchak who edited it from the Rav's notes. But I tell you, if you're familiar with Sheyurim L'Abba Mori, the height the Rav reaches there in Halacha, I don't know anyone else. I don't want to say I'm prejudiced because I'm a Talmud, but I don't know. You don't see it anywhere else in our generation. The Rav Mamish, it's the Einikel of Rav Chaim, as the Dvavraham wrote about the Rav, that the spirit of his grandfather Rav Chaim rests upon him. And I hope over the decades to come, more and more of the halacha will surface. And then the Rav will take his proper place. People know who he really was. Because I tell you, I'm laughing. There's a third generation today writing about the Rav. Talmidim of Talmidim of Talmidim of the Rav. And they write, and some of them contact me, and I can't believe they don't know who the Rav was. Don't know Aleph Beit. And they're doing a PhD on one aspect of the Rav. But I don't argue. I don't want to be a show-off. I don't want to be critical. What can we say? Every generation's a little bit less than the previous generation. But I hope that if the halacha, the Rav in the classroom, what will be available. If that, but then there's another problem, and that other problem, I don't have a solution. And the Rav's apex is in Yiddish, not in English. And that's a problem. What are we going to do about it? I don't know. I mean, I meet Chassidim already. Chassidim. A Gera with his son wandered into Ohel Aron for Mincha Marav Tzochav. So I'm an idiot. I open my mouth. I like to hug. I like to talk. I like to get people. Who are you? Where are you? Where'd you come from? So here's a Gera Chassid, a Yerushalmi, a Gaborna here. I can't even talk Yiddish to him. Could you imagine a Gera Chassid? His native language is Hebrew. Only Hebrew. Ich red mit dem abissel Yiddish, he says, abissel, even abissel he doesn't understand. So this is a problem. And I don't know, in Satma maybe, in Belz they speak Yiddish, we'll have to hire 10 of them to sit for 10 years, give each one $1 million, and just write out in Yiddish, or translate the Yiddish into Hebrew, into English. So it's a problem. It's a problem. But okay, maybe it's a pleasant problem because we've come home and I have great-grandchildren, many great-grandchildren. They are geniuses. At the age of 2, they speak Hebrew faster than I can imagine. I can't even follow them. 2 years old, and such beautiful, beautiful Hebrew. Ashreinu shezachinu. Gentlemen, pardon my sense of humor, but without the sense of humor, if you see the Israeli politicians, what's going on, I would raise $1 billion to pay the politicians from the time they're elected, they cannot speak. You don't speak. You're not allowed to speak. Just let them 4 years sit and do good things. Don't speak. When you speak, you aggravate every Jew who loves Torah. All right. Maybe, without a sense of humor, we can't survive. Tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, we pick off where we left off with the Meir Shapiro. And next week, we'll finish out the shir, and you'll see Reb Menashe Klein and what's troubling him. And halavai, he knew of Chaim Soloveitchik's article. Maybe he did. Could be he did. It would give him comfort. Until we meet again in health and happiness. Das v'danya.